Everybody ready? Come on, let's go. The Rick Flair Show! Let's go! The Rick Flair Show! Let's go!
Yo, what's up? Welcome to the Rick Thorne Show. This episode's gonna go off. I'm getting ready to call my homeboy Jim Lindbergh, the lead singer of Pennywise, right now. Let's do this.
What's up, man?
Yo, what's up, dude? What are you doing?
Just got out of the water, man.
What do you mean? You surfing?
Took a little surf, yeah. A little run on the beach, a little surf, a little exercise.
I thought you were got out of the bathtub. I got excited.
What's up, dude? How you been?
I've been good, dude. Just been jamming. How you been during all this craziness, this COVID nightmare?
You know, same as everybody, just kind of cooped up and trying to stay busy, but, you know, ready to be done with it.
100%. I mean, the beach is probably the safest place to be, I think.
Right, and we, you know, I've lived close to the beach my whole life, and the people around here, it's a really contentious issue because they're having to close it down every once in a while, and, you know, and different activities. There's a lot of people saying, hey, man, the beach is the safest place to be right now, but then there's other people who are like, well, not when people are, you know, partying, sitting around in a circle together, and, you know, so it's,
yeah,
it's been tough. People have been really, like, you know, fighting it out, and the council just closed it down again yesterday. And I was down there. There was a police truck, like, passing people who were playing volleyball. So it's crazy times, man. We're living it.
So, and the beach, you're talking about what? You're talking Hermosa, right?
Yeah, down in Hermosa. I was, there's Hermosa, Manhattan Beach, Redondo Beach here, and the different city councils have different views on it. Like, you know, it's really crazy because the county owns the bike path, but then there's a strand, which is the walking path in Manhattan Beach. So there's been different governance of each of the two different paths. Like, they would close one, but then you couldn't be on the other, you know, and then, like, you could surf in one place, but you couldn't play volleyball in this part of the beach. So
it's crazy.
You know, it's understandable how people could be frustrated. And then, you know, but, you know, at the same time, the people behind it are trying to do the best they can with trying to protect the community and stuff like that. But, you know, it's just the, you know, the people that are arrogant about it that are the problem. You know, you just kind of got to work with the city officials and try and do the right thing, and, you know. I understand.
Right.
People are really cooped up in their house, you know. Imagine if you couldn't ride your bike.
Well, they tried to do that. Well, what they did to a lot of places is they closed the skate parks. And what we would do is we would say, okay, you know, you're going to close these skate parks. Well, the thing about riding and skating, which is a lot, you know, it's different than surfing, obviously, but is you could, like, go ride street, or people have backyard ramps. You could ride a ditch, or you could ride a full pipe. So if anything, it just kind of said, okay, well, I guess we'll give the parks a break and go ride some street, have rode street in a while. Or, oh, this dude's got a backyard vert ramp. Oh, I haven't rode vert in a while. Let's hit that up. When you're riding, just like when you're surfing, you're not around anyone anyways. I mean, I just, you know, being a bike rider, I don't, you know, I'm like, whatever. But when you're actually riding, it's just the people that aren't doing anything might be the issue. Probably at the beach, too. They're just hanging out, right? But if you surf, no one's around you. You're just jamming, you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. And that is really the problem of what they were trying to deal with, is like, hey, it's not a deal if you're jogging on the beach. It's not a deal if you're exercising on the beach or surfing, if you're riding your cruiser on the bike path, you know, or you're doing your thing, or even skating through town, or, you know, riding your bike. It's when people are congregating in small groups and, like, love to do at the beach, you know, that people like to get together with their vape pens and their, you know, their beer pong, and you know, and it's you know, those type of things they kind of got to keep an eye on. So
yeah,
it's understandable. You know, it's a lame thing, but you know, it's a little bit of cooperation and
yeah, I get past it.
You can get through it, but yeah, but I also believe wholeheartedly with the people on the other side are saying, like, hey man, for your mental health too, like, oh, we got to get out there and exercise. We got to get out there and do the things that you love, because otherwise people watching the news cycle all day long, you're going to, you know, people get into hopelessness and despair, and exercise is so freaking important for your mental well-being. And, you know, sitting here, you know, dwelling on shit, looking at cable news is not the way to stay mentally sound.
How's it been for music for you guys, though? How's this? It's challenging for every band, but how's it been for you guys? What have you been doing?
You know, I've been trying, because it's, you know, hard for us to get together, but I've been working on a lot of my acoustic stuff for a long time. I've been playing on acoustic, so I've just been kind of playing a lot, did some live streams with different people. I'm involved in this festival called Beach Life. We did a live stream with myself and Jason DeVore with 30 Zero, and Jason Cruz was Strung Out, Chris Shiflett from Foo Fighters, and guys from Face to Face, and just had a really good time with that. So just trying to keep busy doing music from home, and I just today, in about an hour or so, I'm going to post up the thing that I just did with this guy who does like kind of like punk rock karaoke style videos, where we get a bunch of different guys together from different bands, and
right,
and we did a cover of No Control by Bad Religion with Ian Cohn from Sum 41 and Derek Pfeiffer from Goldfinger, Mikey from Fairmount, and yeah, it was really kind of cool. Doing stuff like that, you know, where you can kind of stay busy. But I'm just trying, you know, just like you, you know, I have so many different things going on. Like, I wish I had more time in the day and to do all the stuff. So it's like, I just got some beats from a friend of mine for writing new songs. I'm working on a several books that I want to put out. I'm doing this website for books and stuff like that, and just trying to stay super busy. Otherwise, you know, it's super important to stay busy and keep your head involved, and like I said, exercise, mental exercise, everything out there. It's how you stay positive. And another thing I'm really, really stoked on that I'm doing that is really, really cool is been working with this friend of mine doing some songwriting courses, helping people out that are kind of just getting started songwriting. And my one friend has a son named Cooper, who's a really good little songwriter. So we've been kind of doing Zoom.
Wait, who is that Zoom again? Who's that?
His name is Cooper, and I'm going to post this up to my site soon, but he's a young kid, just graduated high school, and we've been filming our songwriting sessions, and really cool to see this kid, you know, coming to his own in songwriting, and you know, getting people to find that passion, what they're passionate about in their life. You know, it's been BMX and playing in bands and stuff like that. It's so important.
Yeah.
For people to find something like, man, this is what gives me stoke, you know, and whether it's doing artwork or whether it's doing writing songs, you know, surfing, skating, all this stuff, that's what provides the stoke. And so if I can pass that on to another kid, and so I'm looking in the way to do some live streaming type of things where I can do this for more than just one person at a time. You know,
yeah.
And and you write your songs, you know what it's all about. It's and that's, you know, I'm preaching to the choir.
I just kind of go for it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that's what you just, anyone listen, that's just what you got to do. You just got to say, all right, let's go for this, right? But you've always been diversified big time. Like, that's what I like about you, is that you just don't sing in a band. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, you do all kinds of cool shit. And I think that's cool. You're doing the songwriting. But does it, I found some, I'm sorry to cut you off, bro, but I found something out today.
Yeah.
You have a UCLA English major. Is that true?
Yeah.
Does that help with songwriting, being an English major? Does that help you with song structure and just writing in general? What makes sense? And do you know what I mean? Because I flunked English, so I don't know if my songs make sense. But I know yours do. You know what I'm saying?
You're speaking it pretty good right now, man. You sound great. You know what? It was just, it helped in the sense that in reading about different thinkers over the years. And just because I spent some time in college, it doesn't mean I think I'm better than anyone. It's just that I've been exposed to different schools of thought. And like last night, probably for 2 hours, I read the latest book that I'm reading, a book called Fantasyland that's called How America Went Haywire. And it's just tracing all the way back to the origins of our country, talking about the different, like, crazy nutballs that went into making this country what it is, where we all, you know, have all this magical thinking and how that's developed our country to be the way it is. Obviously a great country, but at the same time, like, to believe some bullshit out there.
Right.
You know? There's been all kinds of cults and things that have gone on, and it's just really important for me that you just got to feed your head. And
right.
So for me, reading at UCLA, I was exposed to philosophers like Emerson and Thoreau and a lot of these guys who really, their theory was very punk rock. I usually call Ralph Waldo Emerson the original American punk rocker back in the Civil War era, because it was very individual, about individualism and self-reliance and doing your own thing and not listening to what other people tell you. And it was very punk rock in its philosophy. And that's what stoked me out, because when I was at UCLA, I was still listening to Bad Religion, and I was still listening to the Descendants, and I was listening to what those punk rock philosophers thought as well, and I always suffer. The album Suffer by Bad Religion is right up there with Nietzsche or Freud or Noam Chomsky, any of these great political thinkers out there. They're just saying language that the regular guy can understand, and that's why I think Bad Religion was such a huge force in the music industry at a time when, you know, music at that time in the late 80s was really becoming really kind of crazy plastic, you know, and their songs were very meaningful. And that's what, it just became at the exact right time for me of what I wanted to hear, you know. It's like, I was in the punk rock music, and I was into punk rock philosophy, and I was getting that from some of these thinkers, you know. So it was really, when it comes to songwriting, and that's what I've been telling Cooper, you know, there's three things. There's motivation, inspiration, and perspiration. Those are the three things.
Wait, say that again. Motivation. Sorry, motivation.
Motivation, inspiration, perspiration. And that's like, what's going to motivate you to get out there and do stuff? Like, what made you want to get on that bike that first time? What made you want to pick up the guitar? What was it? Was it to get chicks? Was it because you wanted to go fast? Was it because you wanted to make your mark? It doesn't matter, but what is that first thing that's going to motivate you to get you out there? The second thing is inspiration. Who inspires you? What are the bands that inspire you? What are the writers that inspired you and made you want to do crazy fucking loops on your bike, you know? Like, you know?
Right.
And then after that, it's putting in the work, you know? And that is the main thing that I try to drill into Cooper's head and my own head is that, you know, back at this time when we were writing our first albums and we got signed to Epitaph, I had a program every day, wake up, coffee, something to eat, and then it was right to writing songs. And I would go in the garage with my guitar and I would just write as much stuff as I can and take a break for lunch, and then I'd do it the rest of the day. And I treated it like a 9-to-5 thing, like, this is what I'm doing. I'd have friends pounding on my door wanting to go surf and do things. And I, of course, I made time for that when I could, but otherwise it was work, you know. But it was work that I loved. But it was like, you got it. As soon as you write that one song, you make the next song. And you don't sit there and get lazy. You have to,
right.
You have to work on it. And when the one is finished, you start the next one. And when you accomplish that trick on your deck or on your bike, you know, you go for the next one. And that's how you push things forward. And, you know,
you do.
It's like you said, shred or die. It's the same thing and everything. Keep moving forward. So that's been my theory on this whole thing. It's staying busy, man.
I love it. And, you know, the work, I love it. Everything you just said is amazing. I relate to it 100%. And I also believe that, and I don't know how you feel about this, but the work's never over. You know, like getting to where you want to go is one thing, but then maintaining is a whole nother thing. You know, because then when you have a name and some I don't necessarily say hype, but, you know, a vibe about you people like, now they're expecting something. And that's a whole nother kind of like level of like part of the work you do that you never, for me at least, I never feel like I'm there. You know what I mean? I feel like I always just got to keep going, you know? It's crazy.
That's why I love seeing that. I love seeing that 50-50 thing that you posted was so classic, dude. Like, I love seeing that. And, I got to actually still going for it. And so are, man, you look at other guys our age, man, they're not slowing down. And you know, you look at a lot of people that you know, they peak out really early. And it's like, how come NoFX, Bad Religion, Rancid, all these bands and different people in the action sports and music scene, they keep putting out great stuff and they keep pushing that envelope. You know, why is Kelly Slater still winning titles?
Crazy.
At the age that he's at now, you know? Like, it's because these people have this mental and physical toughness and perseverance that it's really hard to teach people. You have to just keep going for it.
Well, and I also think that we're from that generation, bro, where, like, I mean, I don't know how, I know for me, like, I went from money, you know, I mean, I'm from the Midwest, like, we rode because we loved it. And I think, like, all the bands and athletes and everything you just said, I think we're just cut from the same cloth of, like, that generational time of, like, you did it because you liked it. You know, you did it, you didn't do it because of, like, you know, at least for bike riding, you know, it's not like we had X Games back then, you know what I mean? So people rode because they rode. We listened to punk rock because we love punk rock. You know, we were just looking to express ourselves. And I think that might be something similar with all of us being from, you know, that generation and that era of, like, punk rock's new, you know, BMX skating's somewhat new, you know, and I don't know, maybe it's just the attitude stuck with a lot of us to, like, never give up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, and where you and I met on the work tour,
you
know, that was a really cool, like, situation where we all kind of got all these people got thrown together, you know, of like, you know, I knew Steve Caballero, I had read about him in magazines and you guys riding and various people and my best friends, a huge motocross fan and I had huge BMX fans and all these people. And so I knew about all these people and you guys and stuff like that, but then we were all kind of thrown together, you know?
Yeah.
Into this big traveling tour that was, like, you know, so crazy, but it was also great to see, especially that time when we were out, that all the camaraderie of, like, everyone just, like, you know, checking out each other's gigs and cruising around, being on stage for different things and inspiring everybody. And so many people that were just down to earth, cool people, not a lot of egos. And you could tell when someone with a big ego would come in, it's like they would get driven out, you know, like,
yeah,
it really, Warped Tour after it all, it definitely changed and went through changes after that. But
we need punk rock though, and good music to ride to and skate to. And you surf, you know how it is. Like without you guys, without bands like you, I mean, I love you guys, but like without like good music that you like to ride to get you psyched up, it puts us in the zone. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I ride the headphones every day to this day. Like, do you ever think that would be something that would motivate? Like, I mean, because you're from Southern California, you surfed, you're from the world, you get it. But was that ever an influence in writing of like, I want to write something that maybe dudes could ride to, or did that just happen? Because I mean, you guys are super huge in action sports.
Yeah, I think it was just from being an adrenaline junkie like yourself and all of us here, and growing up here in the fast lane. I mean, this is basically Los Angeles at the beach. People think Santa Monica and Venice had their scenes, and they of course did with Dogtown and all that, but we're only a mile south or a mile and a half south of there, you know, and we had our scene too with Black Flag, Descendants, Circle Jerks, Mike Smith being a top skater, you know, and a great legacy here as well. But it was a microcosm of America in the sense that you had a working class and rich kids, and you had all the cliques. You know, our school was full of every clique that you can imagine, and then punk rock happened here, so it was life in the fast lane. And the guys around here and the girls, and you know, I served with a lot of girls growing up too. You know, like we all wanted chasing that rush. You know, it didn't matter where it came from. It was we had a killer park where you could ride your bike, and you know, we made jumps and stuff, and built ramps, and I skated ramps in our driveway. We surfed every morning before and after school.
So rad, dude.
We just wanted to go faster, you know. And when it came to the music, I think, you know, obviously punk rock was a huge inspiration in the late 70s, early 80s, when we were coming up. And the whole attitude was amazing. But I think it's what... It was the velocity that changed in the 90s, right around 1990. This whole big explosion happened with action sports and music, where Tony Hawk and Kelly Slater, and then...
Killed it. Early 90s. Early to mid-90s, it's when it you know... It was like punk rock got on first, and then we followed shortly behind, and then the X Games. Because the first year for X Games was the same first year for Warped Tour, and it was 1995, if I remember correctly. And it's just, I mean, you guys, you know, those bands you mentioned that you said, you know, like Black Flag and Descendants, did you go to those shows back in the day before you started Pennywise? Did you see that? Did you like go check those bands out, or did you know about them, or did they influence you? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, totally. I've got to post this thing that I have, and I'll send it to you. There's an article from our high school newspaper, because I went to the same, we all went to the same high school, you know.
Wow.
Bill Stevenson and Milo. Milo was on the track team, and
crazy.
I was just starting my first band, and Descendants had put out an album and stuff, and they wrote about it in the school newspaper. Like,
no way.
Local band search for music success.
Wow.
And I have a copy of it, and I remember seeing the Descendants played in Jeff Atkinson's front yard, I believe, like just on a random day where I heard about it. that they were going to be playing in the front yard, and I went by, and I was a couple of years younger, so I was still in high school, and I totally remember just hero worshiping. Like, there wasn't even that many people at the party. It was probably maybe 30 people on their front lawn watching them play. It might have been a 4th of July or something.
That's so
and
rad.
Then they were standing behind a band, Milo and Bill, and I just totally came up and fanboyed on them. It's like, hey, Milo, like, hey, Bill, and stuff like that. And they're just like, get lost, punk. You know, like,
totally
brushed me off, but I didn't even care. But I've always said, you can imagine what it would be like for a 15-year-old kid who's just getting into music and has all these albums, and your favorite bands live in the same town as you, and
wow,
they went to the same high school. It's like, it really was for me and a lot of people around here, it was like, for someone else, it would be like growing up in the same town as Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, and Kiss. You know,
yeah,
it's just like, the rock stars were like within reach, and they played in the front yard of your friend's house. You know, it's like, it was crazy. So it was nothing for us to think, well, I'm going to pick up a guitar and make a band tomorrow. You know, like, that's easy. These guys are doing it. And so what do? Just get a band and start playing, and you go on the road, right? You know, so
yeah,
that was really helpful, was having that. I'm trying to do that with my daughter right now. My daughter's really into music, and I'm like,
cool.
Pick up this guitar, you know, pick up the bass, just start playing. That's how you do it.
Yeah, dude, that's cool. So she's into it, like, hard. Like, this is what she wants to do.
Yeah, you know, with all my girls, I never wanted to push, like, what my musical stuff on them. I wanted them to find their own way, and, you know, and
yeah,
they have, you know. They've all got their own tastes and like different things, and but, you know, we both like this band, Cage the Elephant. I remember I took her when she was like a senior in high school to see them, and it was, I think it was down at Costa Mesa.
Did you say Cage the Elephant? Is that who you said?
Yeah, Cage the Elephant.
Yeah, yeah, they're great, yeah.
And I went down there, and they were playing the Observatory. So somewhat, they're a medium-sized club, but I remember going there, and I got down in the pit area at the front of the stage, and it was all kids her age, and I was just the one dad, like, you know, a foot taller than everyone else. Like, who's the old dad in the
pit?
Yeah,
get out of here.
It was a cool experience to have that, because the band rocked. I didn't care, you know, but at the same time, you know, it was cool. Like she discovered that band, and showed it to me, instead of vice versa, instead of me going like, here, come to this GBH show with me, you know.
Yeah.
But they went to the Warped Tours, and they've seen all that, and you know, obviously liked all the bands and thought it was cool and stuff. But I definitely wanted them to find their own way, and you know, I think it's important to do that and not try and brainwash them into liking everything that you like.
I think, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. So many people say to me, does your son ride bikes? I'm like, no. I mean, we go ride bikes around this, you know, for exercise and stuff, but yeah, he has no interest in wanting to be a pro bike rider. His dream is football, and he's been playing, you know, football now for 4 years. My daughter's is surfing, which is something that I didn't do growing up in the Midwest. So I agree with you 100% that, like, I couldn't live with myself if I was like, get out there and do that, because I wanted him to do that. That's not cool. Like, I think if that was me growing up and someone did that to me, I'd be like, get out of here, dude. I'm not going to do what you tell me to do. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I couldn't agree with you more, man. Let them find their own way, and they'll be happier, I think, you know?
You know what? It's funny that you bring that up, because my dad was really, really cool and very supportive of me. He bought me a guitar when I wanted to be in a band, and he was supportive about all that, but he really wanted me to go to school and finish my education, because he'd been passed over for promotion because he didn't have his education in his jobs, and always was, you know, bitter about that. And so he was the one that really pushed me to get my degree and finish that. And when I did, he's like, oh, well, let me help you get a job. And he worked in the air cargo industry. air freight. And so he got me a job in air freight, you know, trying to help me out, you know, get a 9-to-5 job. And,
right.
And I went back to Dayton, Ohio, and did a 5-week sales training course in the freezing winter, and then got out here and got the suit and tie and the company car and the expense account. And you know, for it lasted 2 weeks. And I was saying,
wow. How old were you?
This was right like the year after I graduated from UCLA. It was 89.
Okay.
And this is right before I got into Pennywise. Right as I was getting into Pennywise, right when I graduated. And so I was basically an air cargo salesman, and I was the worst salesman in the entire world, because they always say when you're a salesman, you can't take no for an answer. Well, I definitely took no for an answer every time. I'd walk in, hey, do you got... Need me air cargo? No, okay, and then I'd walk out. You know, I was just really bad at it, and I just, you know, and it's right at that time is when I saw that my friend Jason was playing in a new band. He was in a band called PMA with my friend Davey, and Jason and I was like, and grew up around the block from him, he had started another band with Fletcher called Pennywise, and I was playing in a cover band at the time. And then I was like, oh, well, you should get in a band. And I was like, well, I just graduated college. You know, I got to go to work and get a 9-to-5 now. And they're like, oh, well, let's just try this thing out and see how it goes. And it literally happened so fast. It was like, oh, I learned the songs that they had, and we played a couple shows, and like 200 people came to the party, and then we, you know, some more songs got on KXU, and it was like 6 months later that we were, you know, talking to Epitaph, and, you know, so it was a really fast transition of me, like, graduating from UCLA, trying to get a suit and tie job, and then, you know, playing at you know, clubs, club lingerie, and places on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood at the same time, so it was a really strange transition there.
That's badass, though, dude. That's an amazing story.
Yeah,
I mean, it just is. It's like I didn't know anything. I didn't know any of that about you, and I'm so stoked right now. Like, that's
yeah.
You
but
know?
It is going back to what we were saying about it. It's following your passion. You know,
you can
get that 9-to-5 job and still sing for a punk band, and you can get that 9-to-5 job and still do DMX and do whatever stokes you out. You know, it just so happened that we were able to take our band on tour, and a lot of that happened for us really came about when the videos, because you know how popular all those action sports videos were.
Yeah,
surfing it with Taylor Steele, and I know we were in a lot of DMX videos.
Motocross
videos, and all that stuff is so important for our band, because kids all over the planet, it doesn't matter where you're from at all, that was where you learned your skills. You know, you watch those videos and like, how in the hell did that guy do that trick on his board or on his bike? You know, like,
yeah,
you know, how am I, you know, and wow, that song that I heard makes me pumped. I'm going to get out there and try that trick and listen to that song and, you know, do that for myself. So we all of a sudden had fans in Australia and Germany and, you know, Brazil and all these places. Like, it felt like overnight, you know.
Well, I'll tell you this much, to comment on what you just said, putting together a video part, you're always thinking, what song am I going to put this to? And once you find the song, once you say, okay, I know what I'm going to put my video part to, the song, then the edit becomes around the song. In other words, you want tricks to land a trick like on, like, you know, a kick drum, boom, or a snare, or a guitar riff. And so then you're just like, oh, and so then you start to piece your then what happens is, at least with me, even to this day, is then what happens is then you start to shape kind of like the structure of your video part around the song. And so anybody, any of the kids out there listening, what Jim's saying is before there was like MP3s and all this, the access to get new music was through the VHS tapes and people's video parts and stuff. So that's amazing that you built such a fan base through that, because it's such an important part to this day of everything that we do, you know?
Yeah. And it's cool to see people are still doing it just in a different format now, you know? And
well, we can't get away with it like we used to. We used to be able to put AC/DC on, like, you know what I mean? Now they're like getting calls like, hey, man, you know, as our sport grew and punk rock grew and all that, you can't just use any song without permission anymore, you know? You know
how
it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But whatever. That's exactly. Cool, though. That's cool, though, that you guys built it. So how was that, though? Like, when you first went on the road, were you like, in your mind, were you like, okay, I made the right decision? Like, I made the right, I'm glad I got my degree, but did you feel that way when you were in Pennywise rather than the salesman? Like, okay, I made the right decision.
Well, I, you know, before, during, in high school, and in, you know, I was in bands in high school, I was in bands in college.
Right.
I was always doing it the whole time, so I wanted to be in a band,
right,
writing songs, and I've been doing that since like my sophomore, junior year in college, in high school, and so I always wanted to do that, but, you know, people say, like, oh, have this to fall back on or something
right.
like that. I guess there was some of that, but, you know, I was kind of doing what I wanted to do, and also, like I said, my dad really wanted me to get the education, so you're just kind of going like, man, how's this going to play out? And that, you know, I get a lot of younger bands and people come up to me, and over the years I've tried to help out bands, and it's tough when it doesn't happen for them, even though they're really talented. And I always get back to the idea, for us, it was a perfect, all these ingredients came together at the exact same time of what was happening in the action sports scene, of the whole video parts exploding, and, you know, all that came together, and with this huge evolution in the sport happened, and in music, all happened at the same time. So for us, you know, sometimes it's luck. So you got to have the perfect combination of, like I said, inspiration, perspiration. You got to put in that time, and then you're hoping that things aligned for you, and it just seemed to do that for us. And so at that time, for me, I was just kind of going along for the ride. You know, we at a certain point, I was still working I got into an advertising job, and I still was, even though we were signed to Epitaph, I was still, you know, working my job. And I got a broken nose from the slant at one time, and had to go to work with a big broken nose in my suit and tie job. And everyone's like, geez, like, what is up with you? Did you get a nose job or something? And I was like, no, I'm in a punk band. And they just looked at me like, what in the hell are you doing, dude? Like, get out of there. And
oh, my God, did you get a nose job? No, I'm in a punk band. That rules.
Yeah. I got a nose job, all right, but it was someone's elbow, not from any doctor. But and you want to know something silly about that story? Is that this band called The Nymphs were playing, and me and my friend went to the show and got in the pit for a while, and I took an elbow to the bridge of my nose, and it broke my nose so bad that my nose was blocking my vision. It just totally pushed my nose aside, so I couldn't even see out of my one eye. And I went to the bathroom to check it out. But it's funny, it didn't even bleed. It just totally broke my nose and pushed it to the side.
Wow.
And we were in there, in the bathroom, looking at my nose, and all of a sudden, Flea from the Chili Peppers comes out of the stall.
No way.
And he looks at my, and you know, they were already a huge popular band by this time, and he looks at my nose, and he's just like, he didn't know what to think. He just looked at me like, there's something wrong with your face, dude. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And But then my friend just was like, freeze, oh, no way, freeze, what's up, you're the man, dude. And we kind of scurried out of there after that. But
that's funny.
I was like, he's like, come on, let's go back in there, freeze here. And I'm like, dude, you got to take me to the hospital, man. My nose is on the side of my face right now.
You're like, yeah, that's cool, but that was flea, bro. Just sit tight.
Yeah, I know. Just still, you got to go back in there. Yeah.
No, flea's cool.
You know, it was a crazy time, and we just kind of rolled with it. And we went on tour and played some shows and kind of just took off from there.
Yeah, well, I think that's amazing, and it's an amazing story, and that's pretty rad, dude. I want to comment before we go here. I got a couple more questions for you about, you started doing a lot of, you, like I said earlier, you're diversified. So you asked me to be in the Punk Rock Dad documentary, and you had done a book, right? So you wrote the book first, and then you did the documentary second, right? That was your project, correct?
Yeah.
So you're doing that because you're a punk rock dad, right?
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. So and then you also do the paint. What is it called? The paintbrushes and punk rock. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
You started doing art too, right?
Right. Exactly. You know, the punk rock dad thing came about so simply. You know, I always like to write and stuff. And it was our booking agent who said, you should write a book about being a dad and being a punk dad. And I'm like, okay. You know, I just said, oh, we've got a literary department here at the booking agency. And so I said, okay, I started writing and wrote a couple chapters, and they sent it out. And Dr. Collins said, we'll publish that book, right? So went through it. And, if writing a book and stuff like that, it's as easy as you and me right now telling stories, you know? And that's all it is. And then you transcribe it, you know? It's not as hard as people make it out to be. I wrote the book in the back of tour buses and backstages and hotel rooms and, you know, I just got it done. Like I said, put in the work. And then, but it was all just about the strange life of being a touring musician and being on the Warp Tour and, you know, waking up and, you know, hitting the porta potty and living that life. And,
right, trying to find a shower.
Being on stage. Yeah, I'm having to be in Groundhog Day, just doing that every day all summer long. And then coming home and having to deal with kindergarten teachers and Christmas and Halloween and all the stuff that dads do and how crazy all that is and about how there's rules out there that are great to follow and rules that are made to be broken and just try to apply that to the idea of what this kind of new parenting was going to be like. And I really think there is a new parenting out there, in the sense that I think, just like yourself, I've seen cooking shows you do with your kids and stuff like that, you know, like, just get involved with them. I mean, I love my dad. My parents were great and stuff, but they were kind of in their own deal, you know. They both work and they,
right,
you know, have their happy hour and stuff like that. And parents today are a lot more involved with what their kids are doing and try and do stuff together. I think it's actually a much better thing. So it was kind of, the book came out of that, of just like talking about what it's like to be in the two worlds. And then the documentary was just an extension of that.
Right.
And we got to talk to great dads like yourself and all these other great people who pretty much had the same story. And like, hey, man, they wanted to be good parents to their kids, and they wanted to be there for them.
Yeah.
So that whole experience was really cool. And then
I related to that, dude, because, like, I what you're saying, and thank you again for having me in the documentary. Anyone out there, check out the book or the documentary, Punk Rock Dad. But, like, dude, I would go, like, riding and do my thing, like, you know, Warped Tour and all this stuff, and then come home and be like, the only dad at swim school going in a circle. Wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round. And these parents, and I'm all tattooed in the pool with these moms looking at me like, what's going on here? But it was so rad because it wasn't even about, it was just like, you know, you got to bond with your kid. You got to, that's the, that family first, you know what I mean? And that's what, that's why I was really stoked to be, you asked me to be in that. And I really, really, I don't think I ever really said thank you, but thanks. That was years ago.
No, definitely. I remember your part. We filmed so much stuff with all the guys and various stuff, and then it ends up, you know, everyone getting cut down. But I remember the part.
Seems like a lot of your, stuff you do. I'm sorry, go ahead. I cut you off. What's that?
No. Okay. I just remember that your piece in the documentary was super cool and reminded me of myself as well. And Lars from Ramkid and just all the different guys, it was so relatable, you know, because
yeah.
I felt the same way. And it's like, because you want to fit in as a dad as well. You know, you want to be able to go to your kid's party and not stand out. But at the same time, you want to be the individual that you are and be proud of who you are. So there was always this, like, kind of, like, weird thing when it came to parents' night, you know, of, like, oh, who's this guy? You know, sometimes you're like, man, I wish I was just like some accountant guy like this guy so I didn't stand out. But at the same time, being stoked that you were different, you know?
And right.
That, you know, and you know, it was definitely different for all. I had three daughters, and it was different for all three daughters. Like, you know, my one daughter was a little bit embarrassed that I was different. Well, my other one was like, yeah, my dad's rad, you know?
Right.
And so you kind of like, you roll with it with each way and just however they want to handle it, you know? So I thought the film was just, and you know, the book was just an extension of that, of letting the people that wanted to read it and watch the film, of letting them know, like, hey man, it's cool to be all of this.
Right.
Like, you know, like, it's cool to be a normal parent. It's cool to be an alternative parent. It's cool to be what you are. And
yep.
And I was, so I was, this wasn't a parenting guide at all. It was like, this is what it's like for me. It's like, this is what it's like for Rick Thorne. This is what it was like, you know, these were the struggles I faced, but, you know, it was rad, and it was a, you know, it was a learning experience. And I'm really proud of the way that the film captured that with a lot of different people from the scene. I mean, there was things that you laughed, things that you cried, and at the end of it, I think people were really stoked with the way it came out. I still get, like, practically every show that we play, I'll get someone coming up to me saying how much they like the book and the film, so that's definitely a stoker.
Yeah, I mean, you do, and that is rad, and you do, I relate a lot to you because you do a lot of different stuff, you know, and that's why I was bringing that up. It's like, you did the book, you did the film, you did the band, you know, you, and by the way, Flea was in the documentary too, which was rad.
Full circle.
It is, right? It's crazy. And then, you know, I went to the punk rock and paintbrushes thing and event downtown LA, and I noticed that, oh, well, here you are again, and now you're doing artwork and different types of forms of art and expression. And I totally dig it, man. How did you get involved with that scene and the art? Was that something they approached you, or did you approach them?
You know, it was, I worked with Emily Nielsen, who, she started out this thing, Romantic Rock, and it evolved into Punk Rock and Paintbrushes, but I did a benefit for her with a bunch of other guys many years back, and it kind of grew from there, and we always kept in touch, and then I saw that she was doing this punk rock and paintbrushes thing, and I saw Tim Armstrong from Rancid and Matt Skiba and Tim from Rise Against, and then just more and more of these people and bands showing their artistic side, and a lot of them were tying in lyrics to their songs into their art, so I just started doing that and trying different things out, I've always been into drawing. I think when you're someone who is on the creative side, if you like drawing, if you like playing, you like doing stuff like that, there's not just one way you can express yourself. I'm sure anyone out there that can write a song can do some art, can do something. And that's like, I love seeing guys like Steve Caballero coming out with their stuff and showing that side. And Tim from Rancid, and his stuff is really, really amazing. And so got inspired by those guys as well. I was like, hey, let me give it a shot. And
awesome.
I did my first one with doing some of my heroes. I did one with Keith Morris, and then I did a couple of lyric videos, and now I'm working on a self-portrait run that I'm going to do next. And it's just a good outlet for creative expression. And it's cool to have all the support, from people that are interested and want to get involved and are collecting all that stuff, because I would love to have it. I saw a stand-up that lead singer Devo is like a great artist, and like that was the first band that I went and saw, and they're such a huge influence on me. And Mark Mothersbaugh being like this insane songwriter, lyricist, and just so cool. Now to see that guy, he's an amazing artist. I would love to get some of his art. I'd love to collect that art. Can't really afford his stuff. It's so good. But, it just really stretched me out to see musicians and people from the scene having that expression and being able to do that. So I'm going to do a lot more of it.
Awesome. Dude, I'm stoked. I'm stoked for you. You're an inspiration. You're an inspiration to a lot of people. What's your Instagram so anyone out there could follow you and what you're doing?
Jim Lindbergh, PW.
That's it. You're awesome,
that's
bro.
It. Easy.
I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me, bro. You're badass. I can't wait to see you again.
Right on, man. And you keep doing what you're doing. Oh, you hear that? The alarm just went off.
Wait, what just went off?
Yeah, my alarm just went off. I guess we're done, man. That's time's up,
dude. Perfect. Bro, you're
back. I love you, Rick. You're the man. And thank you so much for having me on the show. And just keep doing what you're doing. Shred or die, bro.
I love you, bro.
All right, thanks, Rick.
Okay, bye.